This podcast contains explicit language, really explicit language.
Listeners of this show should be advised that we will deal with a cult that has certain ideas that are...
They're fucked, Paulina.
Yeah, they're really fucked.
We'll be dealing with all the ist, aughts, and ites.
Racists, bigots, anti-Semites, misogyny, certainly. And ooh, eugenics. Kicking it old school with eugenics.
Certainly a very old way to be racist. But you've got to remember, MGTOW and everything we're talking about is a cult. No matter what they say, nothing they say is real. And we love you.
We absolutely love you. Thank you for coming along on the ride, and we're sorry already.
What you are about to hear is the Hashtag Cult Podcast. What is a hashtag cult? Hashtag cults are groups that signal membership by using a hashtag or keyword. This allows the group to operate on many different sites and makes them difficult to pinpoint. They use the hashtag model to spread propaganda on a variety of social media platforms without having a central account. This is usually because their ideas are offensive or their methods of communicating are abusive and border on website policy violations. In this show, we will show you the coercive groups and cults hiding in plain sight on the internet.
I just started recording it now, so I wasn't in on the fictional fun that we weren't recording of. Okay, hold on. Let me pull up my notes. Okay, and now they're equal, our notes. Okay, equal in size and girth.
I just turned up the volume on my headphones, so now I can hear you even better.
Oh, wait, maybe? No, I'm up. I'm up pretty loud on my end. Hold on. Hey. You know what's the thing?
Hey.
By the while we're getting started here, because it's going to be like a more fun episode, but who cares? Let's still start with a fun thing. First of all, who are you even? I was supposed to talk to Paulina. Let me talk to your manager.
My manager? That was my manager's voice, but I didn't.
Wait, but
to
your
it.
Manager walked in and said, "My manager."
My manager. Yeah. But,
like my
that.
Liege, he walks in. I am the manager of the land.
Yeah, my manager is on call all the time.
Well, where's the Paulina? Bedroom. I was supposed to talk to Paulina. Let me talk to your manager. Where is she?
Hello, this is she.
Why weren't you here initially, Paulina? Who was I talking to before?
My manager is very, very aggressive.
Oh, okay. I understand. And at the same time, you know? I don't. I'm lost in how many characters are in the bit, Paulina. It seemed inconsistent. I still need to... Are you Paulina Pinsky?
Yeah.
Who's Paulina Pinksy, as I use as a typo often?
Pinksy!
I'm Mike Fallick. Okay, so speaking of words and typos, you know how people don't like the word moist?
Yeah, it's not a great word.
Well, yeah, and it's like a hacky bit to do to talk about moist. Okay, girth gets no shade at all, and girth is definitely worse than moist.
Yeah, but it's more phallic, and phallic-centric things tend to get a better rap because...
You're saying, wait, are you saying that as fighting for all women in the land, I need to be making fun of girth all the time?
Yeah,
if what
actually,
I'm hearing is true.
It's actually a feminist stance.
Yeah.
So I really, I condone it.
Do you know my girthy feminist stance? Welcome to Hashtag Cult Podcast.
It's girthy over here.
It's girthy out here. Let's go to Ted with the weather. How is Ted? Oh, it's just girthy everywhere today. So we are doing a documentary about MGTOW. Paulina, what's MGTOW?
MGTOW stands for Men Going Their Own Way, which is a online cult, which specifically admonishes the nature of women and fights for the rights of men, essentially.
Yeah, and today is going to be a fun one because we're going to kind of what we do is we take these anonymous interviews or expert interviews that I've done or Paulina and our team have done with people in the expert field of cults or maybe how the internet works or how the mind works.
But in this case, we've been doing an interview with a person named Codename Tom, who is a anonymous member of MGTOW. And MGTOW is what we call a red pill cult, and we've sort of dodged around it, and you've probably been annoyed by every time we talk about red pill. I say, well, we're going to talk about the Matrix eventually, and we're really going to get into it. This is our full Matrix episode.
Dun, da, da, da.
That's the theme song from the Matrix. So we're going to go. Do you know what's weird? That is the theme song, though, kind of from Superman movies.
Is
have
it?
Gotten better. Yeah. So we're going to play this clip from 15 minutes, which is where we kind of left off last time. We've left off. It's a very deep interview with Codename Tom because he is very typical of a MGTOW, and he's a complicated figure, and there's a lot going on. But at 15 minutes, which is where we were going to start this episode, we talk about The Matrix and Ghost in the Shell. So we'll play that clip now. Oh, no, you said he was a blank.
Can you turn up the mic just... Oh, a blue color.
I don't know what that
just
is.
Just turn the mic up just a little... Oh, it's... I discovered you off of a MGTOW tag on YouTube. Mm. And the title of your video is "My Friend is Brainwashed by a Sex Cult." So what I assumed is that, and it's my fault for assuming, it really is, I'm sorry. What I assumed is that you were familiar with other, with like pillosophy is what it's kind of called on the internet. Like this is all stuff that I fell into. I had all the mindset before I discovered like the words for it. Same with snakes and suits and the DSM-5 thing. I had the idea, just couldn't put a name to it. Mm-hmm. Blue pillar is just he didn't take the red pill. He didn't want to learn about what female nature was, quote unquote, or how our economic system works, or any of that. He just wanted to have a good time and figured that he could do that perpetually. Mm-hmm. Without too much consequence.
That's a reference to... I've seen The Matrix.
Still lives like that.
I'm a big fan of The Matrix. That's from The Matrix. Do you like The Matrix?
The original. Yeah, everyone likes The Matrix. I just watched it, in January?
Have the Animatrix?
I saw it a long time ago, and I was impressed, but anime's not my bag.
I love that. That's like... I've done little marathons where, there's some about Zion before when Neo comes in and Zion during and all this history. So I'll watch the stuff that happens before in the little short and then watch one. And then, there's lists, that are like.
Yeah, you want to get the full story. Yeah. The way you are with that is the way I am with Ghost in the Shell.
Great series. The original, right? The original series.
I watch that every year. Yeah.
Fantastic series.
I've watched it every year since I first watched it, and I get something new out of it every year. In fact, once I get my fucking YouTube back, I'm going to be doing a reading of Catcher in the Rye, and then I'll be doing a reading of, what's it called? An Asimov book. I'm not sure which one yet. I'm going to start reading books on YouTube.
And let's talk about The Matrix, the red pill, and the whole deal. Paulina, what is the red pill to the red pill community, or I'm going to call them red pill cults on the internet? What does red pill mean when it comes to the internet?
So this is my understanding of it. And granted, I watched The Matrix once and it was very recent. So, The Matrix doesn't rule my life philosophy.
Well, let's do what they consider, what the red pill cults, not what the Matrix consider. So what does the manosphere barf? What does the manosphere, I hate that
the
word.
The manosphere.
There is a girthy manosphere out there and I don't like it. What does the manosphere consider to be? It sounds like, speaking of old super, I have to make fun of the word manosphere because there's just some bad words. Like toxic masculinity is a bad word to describe it. And I think manosphere is dumb. It sounds like, how when people talk about, you don't know how, but people talk about old comic books and they're bad. Like manosphere sounds like an old, a 1920s villain. Like, it sounds like something I'm not going to read.
I'm Manosphere, and Manosphere. I'm going to take all your gold.
Not all gold. I got that from American bonds funding Civil War, I guess, in the 1920s.
Civil
I don't
War
know.
War in the 1920s. Yes, that is history.
There's no war bond. Okay, so what does it mean to the Manosphere, the red pill?
So essentially, if you take the red pill, you see society for what it is rather than the facade for which it is operating under.
More specifically, to red pill people in the red pill cults on the internet, what does that mean, Paulina? What is society actually?
You're leading me to something, and I don't think I'm picking up what
women.
You're
the idea is women. Yes. Wait, you're losing the whole thread. They don't like women.
No, yeah, they really don't like women. They really don't.
So,
which, if they listen to me, try to understand what they hate. Listening to me talk probably makes their ears burn.
Well, we'll get to that when we do. I'm so upset that on a Matrix episode, I said we'll get to that. But we will get to that when we do our more on Codename Tom, because they don't like people not understanding them. And to a certain extent, that's part of how they create the world of Red Pill, is that the Red Pill in the Matrix is Neo, which, by the way, Mike Fallick, big old dork about the Matrix. I've seen all the Matrixes, 1, 2, 3, and the Animatrix many times. I've seen most of the playthrough of the game, and I've read a bunch of the stuff that they wrote as well about it. I'm super excited for the new one. I love the Matrix. I've also seen the original Ghost in the Shell movie, which we're going to talk about as well, and the Ghost in the Shell TV series, not the new Ghost in the Shell TV series. Please don't at me.
You know, I'm so glad that you're well-versed, because my understanding of the Matrix is very rudimentary. I really appreciate the movie, but I can't say that I'm obsessed.
If we were math people, we could have made some joke about a rudimentary Matrix. I'm sure there is like an equation. You know what I mean? Like there's...
Oh, there must be. But I was the kid that cried at the kitchen table because I couldn't do multiplication. So
isn't that how you do multiplication? Isn't that how you learn it? I thought that that's in... A lot of people are teaching at home now, their own kids. Tell me if that... I'm pretty sure that's in there, Paulina. You're supposed to cry about it. If people learn multiplication and didn't cry, like, turn off the podcast.
My brother is a math genius, and he would, like, look at it and be like, 47.
Because he did his crying. He did his crying in secret. You have to keep secrets from twins and triplets so that you can, like, feel superior. Okay, Matrix. God, we're getting to it. So... In the Matrix, if you don't know, it's a movie from 1999, and it's a series. It is meant to be watched in its entirety. Every single piece of media content is part of what we call a canon or continuity for the Matrix, including the video games. A man named Mr. Anderson, which a lot of people forget, that's his name, Neo's name, before he goes into the world of Zion, is a computer worker at a large corporation. And he is also by night a hacker. He is one night approached on the internet by a character named Morpheus, the god of dreams in mythology, who tells him to follow the White Rabbit, eventually leading Morpheus to tell him that the world he is in is a simulation and that he must take either the red pill or the blue pill. The blue pill will wipe his memory of Morpheus and this interaction, and the red pill will unhook his body from the machine he is hooked up to and allow him to live in the true world, which is a dystopia in which humans are used as batteries hooked up to a computer simulation meant to enslave them. So this is a big thing about red pill and blue pill in terms of you complaining before about why someone who says taking the red pill is understanding that women are evil and whatnot and that they're actually manipulating you and there's a conspiracy to for women to be what's the stupid word that they say?
Hypergamous.
And what's that again?
It means that they're constantly looking for a better deal and they are often cheating to get out of relationships, or even just staying in relationships and cheating.
Cheating both sexually and like you would cheating a game, sort of rigging it. They believe that there are only two options. Either you understand their theory or you don't. There isn't you disagree. Let's start with that, with why this, they, I call them red pill cults. Inherent to their understanding of the movie and their ideology in general is not red pill and people who disagree with red pill. It's either, if you saw the evidence, you would either get it. So if you don't agree with us, it's because you don't understand what we're saying. And
That sort of reminds me, it just feels like a very oversimplified way of being. That simplistically, like, oh, you haven't heard what we have to say. And if you actually heard what we had to say, you would believe us, you know, mm-hmm. which kind of reeks of that sort of cult-like mentality, right? It's like,
I'd say more than reeks of, I'd say they made a broth. It's meant to smell that way. They stewed it, they served it up, and they gave it to us. Yeah, it is. And this is the thing that everybody wants to kind of argue with us and our patience in having, saying, well, is this a cult? Isn't it a cult? That's the start to every red pill group, is you either get it or you don't. You don't disagree with us. You're stupid. And that is the basis for most cult-like understandings of the world. There's no gray ground. There's no second path to enlightenment, which is another idea that the Matrix doesn't support. They don't say that. The red pill and the blue pill are not the only options. Let's get into that. So in the Matrix, if you haven't seen the whole thing, which again, a lot of people on the internet just hear someone talking about something. We've met these people and then they've never actually seen the source. And Pauline, I want to talk to you about a serious issue before we talk about this. Okay?
Okay.
Have you ever claimed, and I'll admit I've done it, have you ever claimed to see parts of movies?
You know, I can't say in recent memory that I have.
I've done
mostly
this.
Because I cannot regurgitate quotes. I can't even remember titles of movies that I watched. I'm just like, I literally.
So you'd rather be like, no, I've never seen it, even when you've seen it.
Yeah, I'm like, I haven't seen
no,
that. And Zach will be like,
that?
We watched it last night.
No,
like,
I haven't. Yeah, which part though? I don't think you remembering that right. So I've seen parts of movies. Look, everyone, just admit you haven't seen the movie. Okay.
It's just not start that hard. I will say, just pretend that you can't remember anything and then you're off the hook, you know? That's how I do it.
I'll admit some movies I haven't seen. I'm trying to think. Oh,
what's that? The movie with the Moonlight. No, not Moonlight. I saw that.
Moonshit Kingdom.
Moonshit. I have not seen any of that guy's movies.
I have not seen Moonfuck Kingdom. Oh, my mouse is going crazy. Hold on. But I have not seen Moonshit Kingdom.
I almost said I've never seen an Anderson Paak movie, and that's just
who's it. Is that
Anderson Paak is like a musician.
Oh, I was gonna guess that it is that Wes Anderson.
Wes
Anderson is the avatar for Tupac. And that's what I was thinking this was that Tupac lives on in Wes Anderson and that like he can hollow project him. So yes, I can. I did. So the so let's go here. If you've actually seen all of the Matrix, the blue pill and the red pill, and this is a reason that I have a big problem with the Matrix, with the red pill cultures from the start, from the get-go, why I have a problem with them. Well, let's get to all the other misogyny and horrible stuff later. The blue pill and red pill are not the only option to get out of the Matrix. There are several instances, and this is what the Animatrix is focused on, of people enlightening themselves. That Morpheus is not a cult. Morpheus is often accused of being a cult leader. In the movie, he's accused of having a pseudo-religion. a large amount of the movie focuses on Morpheus being wrong. So that's something you have to understand. And Morpheus isn't necessarily right. Morpheus, in the end, did not understand his own religion. Oh, by the way, spoilers for The Matrix.
Yeah.
We're going to spoil The Matrix. But there are, in the Animatrix, there are mostly stories of getting entities out of The Matrix, which is the machine simulation. There are three stories specifically which involve escaping the simulation without using the red pill or blue pill, showing that there are more than one path to enlightenment. Mm. The three stories are, I'll do them in rising interestingness because they're pretty cool. One is about a skateboarder who is named, actually appears in the films. Shows up in the second films and kind of knows Neo. He's wants to be part of the crew. He is an adept skateboarder and simply on his own is having dreams, figuring out he's having visions of Neo. He's just having visions of Neo, and he figures out that he's in a simulation, and they communicate via dreams, and he gets himself out of the Matrix. He pulls himself out by jumping off of a roof because Neo says he'll be able to catch him in that moment. Neo is not giving people the red pill either, everyone. Neo is freeing people from the Matrix constantly and not giving them the red pill. So that's another way that you can get out of the Matrix. The second story, which is...
Wait, so to ask a question about
Yeah.
So specifically through dreams and through interpreting messages, this guy is able to find enlightenment, essentially.
Yes, and it's you know, you can look at that through a million ways, through unconsciousness. There's lots of philosophies about and psychology about what we achieve in our unconscious. He talks to Neo in his dreams, and Morpheus is, of course, in mythology, the king of dreams as well. That's how he escapes. He's having conversations and talking to, and you know, dreamlike conversations. He figures out that there is this other simulation going on. The second one, I think you'll have a lot more interesting things to say about. It's about an athlete who is a sprinter and discovers that there is the Matrix and is using the same powers that we see Neo use to be one of the best athletes in the world. He is aware that it's a simulation and is using that to achieve his ends in the Matrix. So powerful is his understanding of the simulation that they try to shut him down, to kill him, but he's able to keep himself alive and aware that it's a simulation and even overcome paralysis via, or some sort of paralysis. We're not really told what it is. Immobility, rather. And he's injured and destroyed by the agents, but then still manages to overcome it. This is someone who has effectively escaped the grasp of the Matrix, but decided to stay in the simulation.
Interesting. Is it because he's benefiting from it?
It's because he feels enlightened. In that world, he is enlightened, isn't he? Which is sort of derisive of the idea that leaving the Matrix is always the smartest you can be. You know, the idea is he's in the Matrix and he's enlightened. He understands it. He can operate in this world. So that's why he wants to say he's benefiting, yes, just took a long way to say it. But the idea that someone would know they were enlightened and not know that there was a higher state of enlightenment, which was worse, is really interesting, right? Because that's how the MGTOWs want to operate. They believe that if they take the red pill, they still are forced to stay in the simulation, right?
Right.
They're still forced to stay in the world of women, which is not achievable via the red pill. The red pill will pull you out of the simulation.
That's really interesting in terms of all of these people who are supposedly taking the red pill are still operating within the system. And I keep thinking about the fact that the narrative of the second narrative is about an athlete. I think that's an interesting choice.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly because being an athlete is about like physical prowess. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, this athlete is using the system to further kind of... I'm imagining, and I haven't seen it, but I'm imagining that, like, he's figured out how to utilize his strength within the system and kind of, like, in the way that Neo can fly and bend things. Like, this athlete is also able to do that. But also thinking about what role athletes take in our culture in mm-hmm. that... Like, some of the highest paid people are athletes. And so I'm imagining that in this narrative, this athlete is also celebrated. Is that true?
Oh, yeah. He is a superstar and proceeds and sort of mimics a lot of the imagery of Usain Bolt. I mean, it's possible that they knew about a young Usain Bolt, but he is a sprinter. He's an African-American gentleman. He is very flashy, and he's not as jovial as Usain Bolt, to be honest, but he's pretty popular and beloved, which was not I can't think of a sprinter before Usain Bolt that in reality, you know, was a famous sprinter before Usain Bolt.
Right.
But yeah, he's beloved by everyone.
It's interesting to both understand the system and achieve enlightenment and thrive within it. And like the narrative of like kind of escaping it is not necessarily the right route for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Like it is possible to both be enlightened and operate within the system to the height of, for lack of a better word, your intelligence, whether that's physical, mental, emotional.
And remember that there's an interesting element to that too, in terms of physical prowess, right? They don't have their actual physical bodies, but they're trying to form Zion. There is a selfish goal of pulling people out of the Matrix to form a new society where you're having your real body in order to, whether it's through war or just by surviving, defeat the machines.
Right.
Are you living a full life outside of the simulation? Which is an argument that the Matrix is making, is that maybe it's not so bad. And that's an interesting element of it, because Paulina's pulled in a source that I think is going to talk about that. She taught me something about the Matrix, but I'm going to get to the last story first because I think you'll have a lot to say about this one. The last story is about people that meditate inside the Matrix, and the goal of their meditation is to try and get a machine that's linked into the Matrix, because of course the machines and robots that chase and try and hunt the humans are also operating on the same computer system. And they are meditating and putting a machine that they've captured, a killing robot, through mental simulations that they create in order to get it to choose to leave the Matrix.
This is really interesting because obviously red pill, blue pill, that's like a binaristic choice, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like good versus evil, yin yang, masculine, feminine. And
nacho cheese and Cool Ranch. We cannot live in peace.
Do you split your Oreo in half or do you eat it whole, you know? No, I think what I appreciate about all these different narratives is that this isn't necessarily a one size fits all, right? And you know, the idea of just swallowing the pill and seeing things fully is fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
I think. I mean, it literally, Matrix is a fantasy film.
yeah.
And I think that that's something like we've been talking about how media is interpreted as fact instead of just fiction, right? And though, you know, I think the Matrix is obviously a compelling narrative and is emblematic of the society in which we live. And, you know, because I kind of believe, like, if you can manifest it, it can come to fruition. Like, just because it exists, like, we could be leading to a future where that is the case, you know?
Oh, sure.
But...
And don't at me. We are not. VR sucks, okay? I know I'm in VR. Ugh. I'm very against VR. I've been on some fun VR rides. I don't think it's as good as everyone's making it to be.
It sounds like dizzy making. Like every time I see people with those goggles, it makes me a little nauseous.
Yeah, me too.
I'll stay 2D over here. No,
thank
we're not
you.
2D. Yeah.
Yeah, there's not one path. There isn't one path, and the idea that there is, even in this fiction, even in this fantasy, which is what you're saying, to stop and talk about VR, even in what you're saying, even if that becomes a reality, even in this fiction, which is one-dimensional, you know, it's a one story, even they thought, no, it can't just be one thing.
That's totally kick-ass. And I've said this before, and I'll say it again.
Say it again.
The thing that kind of confuses me about, like, this red pill culture is, like, it is so misogynistic and, like, you know, vitriolic. And the Matrix itself, though they transition later in life, it was written by two trans women. Like,
oh,
you know,
and we'll get to how there is much evidence. I had often told people about these things, and we'll get to some of the female figures in the Matrix after you tell me about Pellagra and Pellagra. What's the butter you're going to talk about?
Simulacra and simulation.
That's what I said. So for the listeners, Paulina's read me a beautiful thing from Pellagra and Baloney, but which they said baloney boat, and I want one now. But what do you believe, or I guess what does this text have to do with the Matrix itself, and your dad, Dr. Drew, yeah, I'm name dropping, has cited that this
so
was an inspiration.
So embarrassing. He comes up so much.
He's just like, we're always talking about him. So wait, what does this text have to do with the Matrix? What is the inspiration behind it? It is a bona fide inspiration, we found out, everyone. I checked.
Yes.
You missed an uncomfortable conversation where I nerded out and was like, was that a real thing? Did you just get that from the internet? Okay, so you missed that nerd conversation. So how does it integrate into or inspire the Matrix?
So from what I understand, this text was foundational in terms of inspiring the Matrix. And basically it's about this sort of, it's very nihilistic. It's very Nietzschean, you know, it's kind of like, there is no God kind of thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think what is really kind of tantamount to understand is there is no hope for meaning, right? That meaning is mortal, right? It's aspiring to enlightenment in a world in which there is no meaning, because being mortal is a meaningless existence. And so from this sort of meaningless existence springs this kind of like phantasmic alternate reality that, you know, defies dimensions and space and time.
Okay.
It's interesting.
Yes. That's interesting as well, which is the idea that... I've said this before. Hey guys, some ideas on the internet are too hard. But like, let me see if I have a grasp on it. The idea is then that in a world where anything can happen, the way that they use the Matrix outside of the Matrix, seemingly it feels as though life is pointless. And so therefore the belief in the One, Neo, is a driving force in feeling as though there can be an enlightenment and that life is not pretend. Although Neo's main skill is in using the pretend world. So it requires quite a bit of faith to understand that. That's really fascinating, is the desire for enlightenment when you know everything might have been pretend and that your understanding of it was pretend. Am I hitting stuff?
You're hitting it. I wasn't sure where I was started, but we ended up in a place that I understand. I think it's important to...
Yeah, let's tie it back to red pill culture.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's important, as always, and this is something that we harp on all the time, like, it's important to understand the origin of these ideas, right? And, you know, the Matrix is... complicated and interesting and multifaceted, and obviously has seeped into the culture in ways that were incalculable.
Don't calculate.
And no calculating. No calculators here. And so it's important to understand that this was based on like a very heavy theoretical text, you know, and obviously it stands the test of time because it is so multifaceted and interesting and grounded in something. It believes in something. Mm-hmm. And I think, I don't know. I mean, there's so much.
And it's specific.
That's very specific.
I think what you're trying to say is, and that's important, when we've talked about before how some of the people that wrote FemCell stuff later went on to be anti-climate change people and following up on sources and learning what the point of the exercise is, you know. Reins often lists Poe's law, which is that no one understands irony anymore because everything, there will be somebody that takes it seriously. And that's just a thing of interpretation just in general. But like when we talked about that text, I was like, oh, there's a very specific goal here. There's a very specific goal of creating a certain type of enlightened character, a certain type of religious character, not just of grabbing theories from anywhere in the way that hashtag cults do. There's desire here is create an enlightened character, a sort of chosen one who has to confront the idea that everyone knows all of his peoples he must save know that there's a fake world. That's a very specific turn that kind of takes the wind out of a lot of ways you could interpret the movie, right? And it kind of like puts the kibosh on a lot of stuff. And on that same note, let's turn to the other show that he lists, which is
really my big evidence that I know Codename Tom is manipulated by a cult. Because if you were to watch this movie, a very influential nerd movie and sci-fi movie, I'd have a hard time believing he thinks what he thinks about MGTOW, and he's not just scapegoating his emotions into women and society at large if he's seen this. Do you know Ghost in the Shell? What would you know about Ghost in the Shell if I said that, Paulina?
I know nothing about Ghost in the Shell.
Well, it was a movie before The Matrix, and then it was a series after The Matrix. It's quite popular. It's sort of an anime legend. It's one of those movies that is up there with the greatest movies of all time, no less anime. The story is in the future and follows the head of the special forces in Japan. She is what's called She's a full android. In other words, she is simply a brain case, which is the word they use for the technology to put your brain into a, you don't download it. In other words, your brain is surrounded by technology, and then it's removed from your body and put into another body. She's one of the very few people in the world with this. And she was in an accident as a little girl and was put in a brain case and put into various little girl bodies and then eventually a grown-up body. In some versions of the text, it's kind of implied that maybe she skipped ages and things like that. You know, how do you age up an android? And the idea is that she is incredibly powerful, but as a police officer and just as a detective in general in her mind. But how does she distinguish between what is her and what is the fact that she's lived in this robot so long? And what distinguishes society at large, where there's a lot of implants and androids and things like that, and the ability to hook, which The Matrix got directly from Ghost in the Shell for sure, the ability to plug the back of your head into the internet. Who are
Wait,
we?
So Ghost in the Shell is a narrative about a girl.
Yes.
So that's interesting to me, specifically because Codename Tom, super into Ghost in the Shell, but also really doesn't like women.
Mm-hmm. And specifically believes that women will not think logically, which the main character is a detective, and that women will sort of take advantage of the system, which she does not as well. She's like an all-powerful robot. Certainly she could take advantages. She goes up the ranks and earns her space. She doesn't, you know, get anything without it being warranted. It's sort of evidence that he knows it's not real, that there are good people inside of here scapegoating and sort of rationalizing their problems into a theory. Because if you love this show, I mean, the Major is this badass creature who's not without emotion. She's also a homosexual. They show her girlfriend in lots of versions of it. She's also drawn in some of the comic books, slightly suggesting that she maybe is a different race. I'm not quite sure on those ones, but I haven't seen them. But like, in other words, that she could maybe switch races at her will, or maybe she identifies as something else. I haven't read those ones, so you'll excuse me if I get it wrong. But the idea that this detective isn't logical, but she's also incredibly emotional. She doesn't know who she is, and that's sort of the arc of the story, is being like Spock, who they also list as, you know, is also gets listed as the stoic hero. She, the moments where she's triumphing is when she's emotional, when she's upset, when she's doubting. Mm. Those are the moments of triumph in her life, not the stoic moments.
Interesting.
Yeah. And specifically, one of the most famous stories in Ghost in the Shell, which any version of it or reboot of it, starts with some Japanese businessmen, starts with some serious gender bending, starts with Japanese businessmen who they believe one is going to be taken hostage. And the twist in it is that what these men had been doing is they enjoyed purchasing time with geishas and putting their brains into the geishas and having intercourse the other way around. And so
the plot that they sort of foil is the idea that the geishas are running away and they don't chase the geishas when they're actually chasing the wrong people because of a sort of gender-bending plot.
Mm.
These are really, really tolerant, forward-thinking detective stories. And is it possible he lists Ghost in the Shell because he knows he read something on the internet that Ghost in the Shell is good? I mean, it's possible, but I believe him. I didn't test him on it. I believe him. And that to me is an indication that he really doesn't feel this way about women, because it would seem as though someone who thinks women are in charge and they run the system would see a major of the Special Forces unit who has many men under her command and no other women in her battalion. They would see that as scary, wouldn't they?
Right. I think that's kind of where I'm getting tripped up, is obviously this narrative is about a powerful, sharp thinking femme, you know, and you know, I think ultimately, and this is what we come back to a lot, is the hypocrisy is a little bit on the nose a little. It's like,
yeah, it's what Rachel Bernstein calls the irony mirror. You want to hold it up and be like, don't you see how exactly opposite you are?
Like, yeah.
You see how, like, literally everything you're saying is the opposite of what you're doing? And Ghost in the Shell, even the idea of being trans, what makes a woman? You know, even in the instance where I would never say this about a living person who identifies as any gender, but in the idea of this fiction, she is totally artificial. She is a right. man-made body. So is it just her brain that makes her that? Well, then what is that? And that's where Ghost in the Shell, the expression they're using, comes from. Seemingly, you can break down, Dr. Manhattan style, all of the things that make us who we are. But what makes her want to still be female looking? What makes her still want to do what makes her still think of her childhood memories? What, there's something in there, the evidence perhaps of a soul, something identifying us to who we are, which is another big part of the Matrix is, well, yeah, I'm in a jar, I'm literally in a jar, like, you know, but I am still me. What if I come out of that jar and I look different, you know? Am I still me? Is my soul now in my real quote-unquote body? Is that still me? Yes, because of the soul.
It's so interesting. I feel like a lot of this is circling around, like, life essence, you know? Like, you know, what is the real experience? What is the lived experience? In the Matrix, the lived experience is literally a simulation, right? Mm-hmm. Ghost in a Shell, it's a head plug in kind of bot body situation, but all of it is circling around, like, what makes a human.
Yeah.
I think, which is interesting.
One of the more powerful characters in the Matrix, here comes Reins, enter Reins, producer Reins, we're talking about the Matrix. Remember, I'm about to talk about Trinity. Remember how the other day we were watching a movie and Trinity was in it, and I love Trinity so much, the actress, that I didn't watch it because every time she came on screen, I was just so happy to see her in something else? Yeah. I love – Trinity is my favorite character in The Matrix.
Why is that?
The most important line in The Matrix is Trinity is this legendary computer hacker. And when Neo, who knows of her in the world of The Matrix, meets Trinity, he says, I always thought you were a guy. And Trinity says – most guys do. Now, it's a throwaway line meant to be a little bit funny, but in my opinion, it shows A, how aware Trinity is, and just B, how many people she interacts with and the power of an artificial identity. There's a great story in The Animatrix where she is hunting down a detective who is so good at being a detective that he's kind of figuring out the Matrix. And what's really important about it is that it's set on Earth. But the whole thing looks totally different. It looks totally different. And it's not a coincidence that Trinity is the one to hunt this guy down. Because even though it's on Earth and it should look like Earth, right? It doesn't look like Earth. And there's a philosophical question about what happens if I see blue different than how you see blue? How does our world change? And the idea that through this guy's eyes, the world is totally different. And Trinity is kind of the one that has to take him down. She is not Neo, who's sort of a rube. Not the guy that takes the red pill and is the enlightened one. It's Trinity who's able to see that everybody sees the world differently. It's the female gendered character who is able to look past the illusions and continue to operate in them, while Neo kind of becomes like a dink as he becomes more enlightened and knows about these things. And is kind of like, well, why isn't it, you know, working this way? And is kind of looks emotionless and like stupid and kind of needs people to point out his emotions in order to succeed. It's Trinity that is able to do that. The emotions are not a bad thing. Neo is forgetting how to do them. and it requires the cynic who has love to do those things. And yeah, Trinity's a badass, which everyone in the Matrix is. Everyone can throw 1,000 bullets at everyone. But this cross-section, it's in the same way that really most people should relate to Anakin Skywalker, not to Luke Skywalker. Trinity is emotional and thinks irrationally and is a cynic, but she's the one with the power of love. As a really important message to be like, you can hate the world and you can see through all the bullshit, but you're the one with the emotions and love that, like, literally change the world.
I love that. That makes me think of, there's a book by Bell Hooks called All About Love, and it's basically about how love is the healing force in the world. And, you know, I liked how you said that Trinity can still see through all of the bullshit and she can still be a cynic, but ultimately love is what ends up saving the day. Mm-hmm. In a certain way, which I think is an important message. And I think to tie it into Red Pill cults, I think that they're sort of devoid of that foundational message.
Mm-hmm. That the cynic is the one who carries love. It's not that, and that's the important thing too. I think a lot of times in stories, you see the cynic as learning love. It's not. Trinity is clearly the cynic. Trinity is clearly the one that sees everything as, you know, hopeless or whatever as this starts. Yet she's the one who teaches everyone love. That's the really powerful part to me. A lot of times we see the cynic and in the end they learn love, you know? But it's really Neo is the optimist. Morpheus is the optimist. And he's not the one carrying love. Morpheus actually has a romantic plot line in which he sort of feels foolish for giving up love.
And
sort of forfeits his wife, effectively, his girlfriend, they don't get into how together they were, to his political rival. He kind of abandons happiness for no reason. And it's one of the few times that you get to see Morpheus looking stupid. And so he's the optimist, but sort of fails to spread love. And the cynic is the one that tells everyone, like, I love you all, and so I'll sacrifice myself, and I'll, you know, be the one to do the hard stuff, because you're all too cold, emotionless, and logical, like the machines, to see what needs to be done.
Right.
Pretty cool shit, right?
It's really interesting.
How far from the mark is it from Red Pill culture?
You know, I appreciate how well versed you are in this because I'm acquainted with it, but I wouldn't say that I'm the expert in the Matrix. And now after this conversation, I feel like I have a firmer understanding of the lore, mm-hmm. Which is instrumental in terms of understanding Red Pill culture. But I think, you know, it's Red Pill culture is off the mark in that it's missing, kind of in the same way that like the circling question of all these different stories is what is the essence of a human or lived experience. I feel as though Red Pill culture kind of takes the Matrix and takes out the essence of what is supposed to be learned from the movie and just takes sort of like the features of it and repurposes it for vile things, you know?
Yeah. They're scapegoating it. and they're just finding anything. And so it sounds cool. Obviously, the Matrix is very cool. That's about it. And you see, I've actually learned through cults, you see quite a few cult, you know, of course, Hale Bopp is the most famous one, right? They were sort of obsessed with Star Trek. And there's this thing with identity that's so important to all this whole thing. Who are you as a person? Am I me that I know everything about the Matrix? Definitely not. And are you you because you like Star Wars? Are you you because you like these things? And I think that we get confused in the world based on our input and kind of who we are. You know? And that's the metaphor of the computer too, which is like, okay, you can take in all the information in the world, which Neo has done. Who is Neo though? At the end of the day, who are you even though you know all information? Even, you know, if all of society is encapsulated in a digital form, which it is in the Matrix, Neo knows it all. Who is he? That's the question you're supposed to be grappling with and that Neo grapples with. The idea that red pill is even enlightenment is an odd thing.
Yeah.
It's not. It's taking you somewhere else. I think that I'd love to hear what you think about the idea of watching a movie or hearing about a movie and deciding it's who you are.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this a lot, specifically about kind of the discussion of seeing different representations, like diversifying representations in culture, which I think is super important. But I also think it's a weird phenomena that when we ingest media, we want to emulate it, right? Like if you watch, what's that Kerry Washington show where she's working for the president?
I don't
know. Do you know what show I'm talking about?
And whenever I don't know a show, I assume it's How to Get Away with Murder.
Yeah, it's a different Shonda Rhimes movie, TV show.
Where she's working for the president? West Wing.
Yeah, it's West Wing.
Is it Psych or is it West Wing?
It's both. Okay. No, but like, you know, when I was watching that show, you know, she wears a lot of white and she often eats popcorn for dinner with a glass of wine. And when I watched that show, I found myself like eating popcorn for dinner and drinking a glass of wine and trying to wear white.
I hate chili dogs. The only reason I eat them is because Sonic the goddamn Hedgehog eats chili dogs. Don't like them. Hard to eat. Not enjoyable.
Wait, why
I only
do that?
It because of the cartoon.
No, oh, man, I forget what the type of animal he is. It's a real phenomena, though. Like, truly, like, we kind of emulate whatever we're consuming. And I lately have been questioning that of, like, if you start kind of emulating what you're consuming, you're becoming what you consume, but that isn't who you are. Who you are is obviously more multifaceted and complex than just wearing white and eating popcorn. You know, and I feel like as a culture, we're talking a lot about diversifying stories and more representation, which is obviously a good thing. But this instinct to become whatever it is you're watching is such a, and it probably has a psychological explanation, but I've been pushing against it recently because, you know, I along with everybody else is like, who am I? Who am I? And you know, ultimately, I think it's very like I used to say, like in like 2014, if you said a 30 Rock quote, you were funny. You know, it's like whatever you've
said it on this show before.
Oh, I say it all the time. I never understood 30 Rock. Don't at me. we're going to get hate mail for that one.
Hopefully. I'd like some new variety of hate mail. Feel free to change it up on us.
Yeah,
I'd love
please.
Some. I like 30 Rock. So feel free to I'll dump it on. No, I'm going to United Front. Fuck 30 Rock.
Yeah. No, but, you know, it's. I guess I want to push against the idea of making your identity part of what you like. Mm-hmm. I mean, and.
Making part of what you like your identity?
Right. Okay. Kind of like, you know, I feel like Southern California is a big Disney constituent, obviously, because Disneyland's there. And, you know, a
constituent?
Lot of people...
Is Disney representing us somewhere?
Honestly, big there, voting population.
Is there a Disney Congress I don't know about?
It's in the schoolhouse. But essentially... There are, like, a ton of people who really, really love Disney. So much so that they buy Disney, you know, appliances, Disney clothing, Disney everything. They buy Disney, Disney, Disney. And I think, obviously, that's part of, like, a capitalistic structure. I'm kind of veering off here. But essentially, think outside the box. What you consume is not necessarily your entire identity. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's something that we need to talk about as a culture at large.
It affects every facet of people's lives. And there's this thing, right? Like, you're at a party and someone says, oh, you remind me of my friend Craig. How does that make you feel? I mean, in my opinion, it's not great conversation, but like, I have a mohawk. And I think there are guys with mohawks that see me with a mohawk and get upset that they're not the mohawk guy in their life. And I think that that's a big thing, is that, and I think that there's probably guys with mohawks or guys without mohawks who see me have the mohawk and think that I see myself as the mohawk guy when it's just how my hair looks best. So I think that there's this unspoken conversation that the "you remind me of my friend Craig" represents, if we can really get into deep philosophy. What Craig represents is the fact that, like, you're not so interesting. You might not be that unique. And, like, that doesn't take value away from you.
Well, right. I think that that's the bottom line, is we're all trying to differentiate ourselves when, in fact, we're all the same. I mean, the idea of, like, being unique is nice and exciting, but ultimately, like, if we're really going to get, like, New Age enlightenment, like, we are all one. We are all experiencing human consciousness.
I just want to say this. No, because some people eat Cool Ranch Doritos, and I'm not about it.
Okay, I eat them, and they're very good.
They are not. It's just,
you gotta get your tongue checked.
Okay, here's the thing, though. I believe, okay, look, I know that this episode was controversial already, but Cool Ranch Doritos are not that good. It's just because they're called Cool Ranch, the best name of all time.
I don't know. I have to disagree with you here, Mike.
Of course you do. And that's why we're not all the same. Because there's monsters out there like you who go around. And I have to, I've been to stores where they're out of nacho cheese and they have Cool Ranch. And I'm sure there's people the opposite way. Why do we live in the same society? The Cool Ranch people can move to Mars.
This is why America's fighting. over Doritos.
Well, and I think to tie it back to MGTOW and Red Pill is that it's interesting to see them siding with All Lives Matter, which is really predominantly where a lot of the content I'm trying to do currently, some cyber forensics on how much content of All Lives Matter do MGTOW members generate. Of course, they all have anonymous names for their MGTOW accounts. That's a known thing they do, so it's hard to know. But they are generating a lot of it, and there's a lot of discussion of it in their groups. But it's interesting, they side with All Lives Matter, right? Because then it would say that there's an implication in that, in the misguided way of using that, which is idiotic. But in the misguided way, you then have to take a really hippie-ish stance like Paulina just took. You then have to be like, we are all one and everything is different. Not all lives matter. Also, women are inferior.
Right.
Those can't work. Both neither work. But they certainly can't work together. And it's this thing where we fall into this trap every time, me and Paulina. We start to talk about what it's like to be a person outside of a cult. And how do we confront our identity? And, oh, I'm white. I get to see a lot of, you know, white people on TV, even you know, as a Jew, there's a lot of stories that, you know, feature, you know, there's Mel Brooks. I know about Jewish filmmakers out there, and they sometimes get like a lot of play, and I have access to them. I see my identity on TV. But at the same time, well, what does it mean that I eat popcorn and wine? You know, like, what does, do I actually have to relate to these things? You know, what part of, and what we're getting tricked into is none of this is real. They have not watched The Matrix extensively. They have not done any of this stuff. They haven't done these examinations of who they are. They're constantly, if you've ever listened to your 14-year-old self through a time travel machine, you're very sure of yourself and then very not sure of yourself at the exact same time. You're a ball of contradictions. It's not real. It's a version that allows them to yell. It allows them to tell people that they are wrong. And it's not really based on reality. They're in a cult. I'm hoping that that's what everybody hears at the end of this. It's like, we've gone through all these contradictions. Yeah, because it doesn't make sense. And I think Codename Tom is a good dude. I think he's been a good dude. I think everyone in MGTOW starts a good dude. And they, through this cult, create actions that they'll have to live with. And that's sad, because it's turning them into bad dudes. You know? Mm. They through this cult have probably started as a victim. And I still see lots of elements of, whenever I talk to MGTOWs, of reasons to be sympathetic to them. But that's what this cult is robbing these people of recovering, being good dudes. And now they're kind of on the side of bad. And if they have done bad stuff in the past, now they'll never repent for it so long as they're in this cult. They'll never apologize. They'll never fix those actions. And they are turning into bad dudes. And that's what's so hard. It's so easy to be like, man, these guys don't get the Matrix. They're all over the place with their identity. What dinks? But it's like, it's not real, is it? You know?
Yeah.
Either way, podcast canceled because of Cool Ranch. Here's the thing. We'll do 5 minutes on this so people have it, so that this is like a true comedy show. Okay, we're gonna do Oxford debate. You defend Cool Ranch, and okay. I'll take it down.
All right, is it my time to shine?
Yes, you'll have 2 minutes.
Oh, okay. Well, Cool Ranch and I go way back. In college, I would be in the library until way late, and I would say, I'm gonna give myself a little treat, and I would get a bag of Cool Ranch Doritos. Now, what I like about Cool Ranch Doritos is that there's this kind of menthol taste to them. There's a brightness to the profile of a Cool Ranch Dorito that I don't quite get with the nacho cheese Doritos. I appreciate nacho cheese Doritos, but Cool Ranch, just all the chemicals on my tongue sing a symphony. They just crunch right in my mouth, and they taste good. The end.
Thank you, candidate Paulina. Now, Michael. Okay, first of all, someone who would bring powdered covered snacks to a library is a monster, okay? I also don't think that there's menthol in them. I do think that now you've proven that the cool is all in your head, and it's because it's the best name of a flavor ever, and it's Cool Ranch, and it's got fun 90s writing on it. I don't think they're mentholated. I think that's totally placebo effect, or as it's called in most scientific cultures, the Cool Ranch effect. I don't want any of your cool cigarettes chips in my mouth. Nacho cheese forever. I'm also against spicy nachos, so like, definitely at me. I'm fully up for a fight in this. This
You're
is the
so
stuff
delicate
to
when it comes to your Dorito choices.
This is the stuff that we're supposed to be arguing about on the internet, like really angrily and yelling at people and calling each other names, not like normal stuff. Seriously, you know, these people are robbing that from me too. I want to say that. Like, I really want to call Paulina a bunch of horrible names because she eats Cool Ranch. Not because she's a woman. I don't really care that she's a woman. Obviously, she deserves to be thrown into the bottom of a pit because she eats Cool. And the packaging, like that dark blue. Oh my God, get a new color. That's like the oldest blue. I think that's what they like colored like Hester Prim's outfit with. Oh, I hate it.
I'm gonna send you a care package that's just full of Cool Ranch Doritos.
Yeah, Yeah, go ahead. And I will eat them. I'm also like a gross snack person. I'll obviously eat all of them. Like, duh, duh. You think I'm like a snob? Like, obviously, I'm also counting the minutes. And same with, oh, by the way, I'll call this out too. Wildberry Pop-Tarts are bullshit as well. They're not good. It's all in your head. It's because they're purple. You know that they can make the chocolate purple too. It's all fake coloring. Anyway, who are we really?
I learned something here today.
Yes.
There's that Mike here is very particular about his snacky poos.
Yes, I am. I don't want the I also love cheddar. Just throwing that out there.
Cheddar is delicious. Have you had white cheddar Cheetos? I mean, not Cheetos. Sorry, Cheez-Its.
No. But you know what's good? On that same vein of powdered stuff, have you had the... They're called baseballs sometimes. They're white cheddar cheese poof balls.
Ooh, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
That sounds delicious.
Yeah, it's really good. Okay, so oh my God, we're geniuses. At the end of the day, it's all about whether you choose the red nacho or the blue nacho. If you or someone you know has experienced a hashtag cult, is trapped in a hashtag cult, or you have been affected by any group mentioned in this show, go to hashtagcult.org. for resources or to get in touch with the show. We want to hear your story.